In our study of Ecclesiastes, you'll remember, if you would, in verse chapter 3, verse 16, in the light of the evil that exists, going to verse 16, 3 and 16, "Moreover, I saw under the sun the place of judgment, that wickedness was there, and the place of righteousness, that iniquity was there." So we looked for, wherever we looked, even in the right places, we often, more than not, found the wrong. God is going to judge, verse 17. "God shall judge the righteous and the wicked, for there is a time there for every purpose and for every work." So God's going to judge. In the process, everyone here on planet Earth, apart from God, looking under the sun, are living and dying. They're living and dying. And in the process of all of that, verse 22, "Therefore I perceive that there is nothing better than that a man should rejoice in his own works, for that is his portion. For who shall bring him to see what shall be after him?" And we share together that in the light of going into the past, we cannot perceive, understand. We have zero information of understanding of why or where we came from. You have no explanation apart from God's word. You have not one explanation. There's not one place on earth you could find any answer to that. There is no answer. God knows that. But if you leave God out, you don't know why you're here, etc. And, on the other hand, when a person dies, what shall be after them? And apart from God and apart from his word, you know nothing. And we can have all the religious activity and all the religious Hinduism, whatever you want to have, reincarnation, whatever you wish, purgatory. But you have no answer. You have no answer whatsoever. So you can't have any information at the beginning, you can't have any before, and you can't have any information afterwards. And so that puts us in a terrible dilemma apart from God. We're no different than animals. We just die. Here we are, and we die. So here in chapter 4, in the light of that kind of thought, in chapter 4, in the light of that, "For so I returned and considered all the oppressions that were done under the sun. And I looked and stood back and looked at everything that is in life, and I saw all the oppressions." And the word oppression has to do with, similar to our word tribulation, to squeeze, to oppress, to press, to press, urge, compel, force something to happen. "So I returned and considered all the impressions that are done under the sun." They're all there. "I considered all the tyranny, all the injustice, all the evil." Back over to verse 16 of chapter 3. "I looked at the wicked, right, judgment and wickedness. I looked for righteousness and there was iniquity. Everywhere I looked, when I looked a little bit, I didn't find what I thought I might find. I only found oppressions, etc., that are done under the sun." And in the light of that word, oppression, the wrong that is done, I find that. I find the wrong that is practiced, to practice something, to labor, to do, to practice, the wrong that is done. "When I considered all the impressions that are done, labor, under the sun, when I looked at all of them, I observed the many ways that people oppress each other." Humans are noted for oppression, for pressure, for forcing, making things happen, more or less not for good, under the sun. And thus picking up that word oppression in verse 1, "Behold the tears of such as were oppressed." Notice the response of the people that are oppressed, that oppress, squeeze, tyranny and all the injustice that exists. And if you want just to pick up that word oppressed for a little bit, go with, hold your finger here and go over with me to Deuteronomy chapter 24. Deuteronomy chapter 24. And would you pick up the thought, the word, if you would? Oppression, squeeze, force, compel. And in chapter 24, verse 14, thou shalt not oppress an hired servant that is poor and needy, whether he be of thy brethren or of thy strangers that are in the land within thy gates. In other words, you could have people of your same tribe, family, etc., working for you. You could have had people that are strangers, Egyptians, if you would. Over, if you would, to chapter 28. Chapter 28. May I go to verse 9. And thou shalt grope at noonday as the blind gropeth in darkness, and thou shalt not prosper in thy ways. Thou shalt be only oppressed and spoiled evermore. No man shall save thee. So when you get out of harmony with God, chapter 28, verse 15, when you go, instead of blessing, you go for cursing, it isn't going to come out well at all. There's going to be oppression. Verse 33, the fruit of thy land and all thy labors shall a nation which thou knowest not eat up, and thou shalt be only oppressed and crushed always, always. So it's oppression. If you have God in the right place, you avoid and you overcome the pressure, the squeezing, the force, the tyranny. On the other hand, if you don't succeed. Ecclesiastes chapter 4. And in Ecclesiastes chapter 4, may I pick up the thought in verse 1. So I return to consider all the impressions that are done under the sun, on planet Earth, subsolar. And behold the tears of such as were oppressed, and they had no comforter, no comforter. There was no counselor. The king himself, with all his power, couldn't help them. Couldn't answer, couldn't stop, couldn't alter life's realities. Thus, behold the tears, their tears. Now, in the light of that, just hang on for that a sec, the tears, the needy. Remember, misery has a need. And the need of misery is mercy. The mercy of God answers the misery of man. The grace of God answers the guilt of man. So here is tyranny, injustice, all the things that happen in life on planet Earth. And there is the misery that goes with that. And the tears thus flow. Go with me just to get that a little bit. Go over with me, please, if you would. Oh, to Matthew chapter 22. Matthew chapter 22. Keeping in mind now, here on planet Earth, but going past planet Earth, if we don't get to God properly, keeping in mind the misery, the tears, the heartache, of looking at the realities without a good resolution, the realities without any hope, without any help. Matthew chapter 22, in the light of the future, verse 13. Then said the king to the servants, bind him hand and foot, and take him away. Cast him into outer darkness, and there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Weeping, always reality, always misery, always tears, always reality, always the misery of the realities, and always tears. Hell. Hell. Now, having said that, back over, if you're on your way, Psalm 42. Under the sun, if we don't get to God, there is oppression. And who is to comfort the oppressed, those tyrannized, those suffering the realities of time? Who's to comfort them? Where's the comfort going to come from? Who's going to handle their tears? Well, Psalm 42. And may I pick up, please, in thought? Oh, going to verse 3. My tears have been my meat, my food, day and night, while they continually say unto me, where is thy God? Remember, the believing heart professes God. And in professing God and looking to God, the believing heart is to find God's grace. And the world is not going to be happy to have you around. The world is going to go after the believing heart that says this God. Not Methodism, Presbyterianism, Congregationalism, or something else. Where there's God. Where there's God. That irritates the world more and more. So where is thy God? Well, here are the tears falling, the oppression, injustice, the realities of life. And the world isn't letting up. The world isn't merciful. God is merciful. The world isn't merciful. Your work isn't merciful. Isn't it? I know they are, aren't they? The work, politics, merciful. No, no. My tears, day and night. Psalm 85. Remember, we're going to look to God. We're going to look to God with all our heart. Psalm 42. And find God is right there. We don't have to be dismayed, discouraged, depressed. Psalm 80, adding to the, just putting it together in thought. Psalm 80, may I pick up, please? Oh, picking up verse 3, turn us again, O God, and cause thy face to shine, and we shall be saved. O Lord, God of hosts, how long wilt thou be angry against the prayer of thy people? Thou feedest them with the bread of tears, and giveth them tears to drink in great measure. God, why don't you relieve the reality, the impression, the oppression, the miseries, the tyrannies, the pressures, the squeezings, the wrongs? Why can't things be just good and right and even, equal? Well, they aren't. They aren't. And God allows that. God said, listen, what are you looking for? Where is your relief? Where is your comforter? Where are you going to, how are you going to handle that which is under the sun apart from the Creator who made it? How are you going to do it? Well, vanity, all is vanity. It isn't going to end up good. We might as well be like the animal and just die. Is that all there is? Again, Psalm 80 and in verse 5. Thou feedest them with the bread of tears and givest them tears to drink in great measure. Thou makest us a strife unto our neighbors, and our enemies laugh among themselves. Verse 6. Here we are looking to God, trying to trust God, and boy, it isn't going. God said, if you don't honor me, you'll be cursed. How will you be cursed? You will be oppressed. You'll not only be oppressed among yourself, you'll be oppressed by your enemies and people that you know not are going to oppress you. That's your world. Now, how are you going to handle that world? Well, going to look to a great God. And the remnant is going to lament about their captivity by the Assyrians. And then they're going to, like Psalm 80, and lament before. And they're going to lament after their captivity by the Babylonians. How long is this going to be? Psalm 56. And in Psalm 56, may I pick up, please, the thought. I'll read verse 1 to start us off a little bit. Be merciful unto me, O God, for man would swallow me up. He, fighting daily, oppresseth me. Mine enemies would daily swallow me up, for they be many that fight against me, O thou Most High. What time I am afraid, I will trust in thee, God. Yes. Verse 6, they gather themselves together, they hide themselves, they mark my steps when they wait for my soul. Shall they escape by iniquity? In thine anger cast down the people, in thine anger cast down the people, O God. Thou tellest my wanderings. Put thou my tears into thy bottle. Are they not in thy book? God, do you know about the oppression? Do you know about being oppressed? Do you know? Hang on with me just for a sec. Go over to Exodus chapter 1. Exodus chapter 1. Israel is oppressed. And they are oppressed and oppressed and oppressed. And remember now in setting up in verse chapter 1 of Exodus, verse 11. Therefore did they set over them taskmasters to afflict them with their burdens, and they built for Pharaoh treasure cities, Pithom and Ramesses. But the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied and grew, and they were grieved because of the children of Israel. But in the process of it all, verse 14, they made their lives bitter with hard bondage in mortar and in brick, and in all manner of service in the field. All their service wherein they made them serve was with rigor. There was oppression. There was God's hand, but oppression. Chapter 3. And in verse 7, and the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people which are in Egypt, and have heard their cry by reason of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. I know. Now, back over to Psalm 56. God, in the midst of all of it, here are the tears that flow in the light of the miseries, in the light of the oppression, light of injustice, in the light of all that exists. Verse 8, thou tellest my wanderings, put thou my tears in thy bottle, are they not in thy book? Put all the tears in a bottle. God, are they not recorded, all my tears? God, do you know all the tears? God knows all the tears. He knows the cause of the tears. He knows the cry of the tears. He knows it. It isn't a question God doesn't know. It's a question of what a human's going to do. Here they are under the sun, and if they leave God out of the picture, and they're caught up in the normal, just general mill of being on planet Earth, where is the comforter? Where is the comfort? Where is the consolation? Where is the clarity to see through it all? How is that going to be? Psalm 116. God knows all of it, wonderfully so. Psalm 116. Picking up the thought, if I may. Oh, Psalm 116 in verse 7. Return unto thy rest, O my soul, for the Lord hath dealt bountifully with thee. So there's a returning to God, and the reason to return to God is because God has dealt bountifully with the soul. That's why you're going to return to God, because he deals bountifully with the soul. Would you notice, please, in verse 8 again, for thou hast delivered my soul from death, mine eyes from tears, my feet from falling. God, you've delivered me. You've delivered me. You've rescued me. That's why the beginning of verse 7, return unto thy rest, O my soul. God has been kind, gracious, merciful. No question about it. What is the heart's resolve? Verse 9, I will walk before the Lord in the land of the living. I believed, therefore have I spoken. Emphatic, I do believe. I was greatly afflicted. Yes, I was. I said in my haste, all men are liars. People make life full of alarm, etc. What shall I render unto the Lord? What shall I give unto the Lord? Verse 12. For all his benefits toward me. What am I going to do? I'm going to take the cup of salvation, plural, salvations, and call upon the name of the Lord. I will pay my vows unto the Lord now in the presence of all his people. God, I am most thankful in the midst of all of my tears, which you know, which you have recorded. In the midst of all of those tears, I have discovered, when the world was after me, where is your God? I turned around and found you, trusted you, relied upon you. God, I did what I was supposed to do, and you have honored it. God, I owe you. I owe you. Thus, when we come into the future, all the tears are collected in the bottle. God has them. Now, Revelation chapter 21. Revelation and 21, if I may. Picking up in thought, let me go to verse 1. I saw a new heaven, new earth. First heaven and first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea. And I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a great voice out of heaven saying, behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people, and God himself shall be with them and be their God. Now in the light, keeping all of that in mind, here's all those tears. God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes, and there shall be no more death, nor sorrow, nor crying, neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things have passed away, they're all gone. No more tears. God knows all the tears. Now the question is, do the tears encourage, stimulate, provoke us to get to God? That's the question. Do they drive us? Because the world says, where is your what? Where is your God? Where is a comforter for those tears? And if there is a comforter for those tears, then the tears are what? They're wiped away, you see, if there's a comforter. You remember Job said he had some dear, wonderful friends who were what kind of comforters? Miserable comforters. Miserable. They didn't see what it was about. Oh, if we just have a little more ease over here, if we can just encourage you over here and help you over here, and everything will be well. Is that what Job's problem was? All he needed was a new prescription for his body, true? Rub it on, be all better, right? No. See, if we could just go and have a good memorial service for your children, and you'll feel better, you see. And they were miserable comforters. Why? Because they missed the point. Every single time they missed the point. What was the point? God was dealing with Job to deepen and heighten his wonderful understanding of who God was. And they missed the whole thing. They were having all kinds of solutions which would have never accomplished and missed the whole boat. They missed the whole thing. God, what are you after? See? So you have to ask yourself, what is God after for your life? See? Or if we just have a little bit better over here and a little more over here and things will get better and that'll make everything nice, right? No, no, not at all. Not at all. Is that what God's after, making everything nice? No. God isn't trying to make everything nice. He came to send nicety. Remember he sent, remember that, Matthew 10? He said, I did not come to send chaos, I came to send niceties to your house. Do you remember? Some of you think that's true. I got to fix that. Matthew chapter 10. Can't afford that. Matthew chapter 10. Thus, if I may. Chapter 10, you know, verse 33, but whosoever shall deny me before men, him will I also deny before my Father which is in heaven. Think not that I am come to send peace on earth. I came not to send peace, but a what? A sword. I am come to set a man at variance. The word variance means to disunite, to divide in pieces. I came to set at variance against, to be divided against his father and his daughter, against her mother, mother-in-law against her mother-in-law, and a man's foes shall be they of his own household. He that loveth father, mother more than me is not worthy of me, and he that loveth son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me, and he that taketh not his cross and follow after me is not worthy of me. God said, listen, do you know what I'm after? And everyone else is after for something else. You're missing the whole boat. You missed the whole boat. I didn't come to send peace. I didn't come to make your family wonderful. I came to make you a saint, to be saintly. I came to make you be holy as I am holy. That's what I came for. But, no, I didn't come about your job. I didn't come about your house, your family, your health, your wealth, children. I didn't come about that. You have made that. We have made that the issue. God never did. He never did. In fact, I had a thing. I was going to bring it out because I didn't realize. I knew the Roman Catholic position would be to bless animals. True. And they're having a thing. I wouldn't post it. They sent a big colored brochure to post. I forget what day it is. I'm not even going to tell you. Not going to tell you. And you can bring all your animals to be blessed. Canaries in cages. Cockroaches in little bins. Bring everything you have to be blessed. And Lutheran Church and so is going to do it. And now that, you say that. But they've added something I never. It's a money-making thing if you're a gangster. And bring the name of your animal that has died, and we will pray for them. Now, what do you think of that? Yeah. Trees, bugs, humans are out. You know, somehow they misread, God miswrote Genesis. He created everything for humans. And it is rewritten, everything is created, and humans are an interference. They're an interference with creation. So, in the light of that, a comforter, the God of all, how much? 2 Corinthians, you know it, but just lock it in. 2 Corinthians chapter 1. Verse 3, blessed be God, even the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of our Lord Jesus, the Father of mercies and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our... Do you see the word tribulation? Pressure, squeezing, oppression, compulsion. Same, only different Greek word, Hebrew word. Oppression. God comforts us, verse 4, in all our pressure, squeezing. And that's the testimony that where is your God? And in the midst of the tears and the trouble, you look and find God who wipes away all tears. And you look to God, and you have it in the right focus for the right reasons, not the wrong reasons. No, we aren't happy because things get a little better, a little worse. No, we're going to be happy because we're looking to God who is quite pleased with being who he is, and we're going to trust him with all our heart. Thus, back over to Ecclesiastes. So the comfort has to come from God. And if we don't have God, that's the whole point of Ecclesiastes, you don't have anything. So all of humanity, with their atheism, with their agnosticism, with their religious systems, have nothing. What have you got? You know, see? If you really be objective about it, really objective, and look at any religion you want, whether you want to look at anything, Rosicrucianism, whatever you want to look at, yoga, whatever, try it. And take a good, hard, real look. And there's nothing to pursue. There's nothing to go after. Not going to get anything. Not going to go anywhere. Won't make sense. Thus, chapter 4, Ecclesiastes. Let me read the verse and then go on. I return to consider all the oppressions that were done under the sun, and behold the tears of such as were oppressed. They had no comforter. And on the side of the oppressors, the ones who were forcing, compelling, and doing the wrong, there was power, and they had no comforter. There was no one to overcome. The bad guy seems to win. The evil seems to prevail. It goes from one generation to the next. It never seems to stop. Thus, in verse 2, a conclusion. In the light of verse 1, there is oppression. There is no... Everyone is oppressing something, somewhere, somehow, for some reason, for some end, for some gain. There is no comforter. There's only tears to be found. Conclusion. Wherefore, I praised the dead. I praised the dead. I highly praised the dead. That means he said it out loud. The verb is out loud. To do something, praise, to make an impression. It makes an impression, this verb does, the way it's done. Wherefore, I praise the dead. I said congratulations to the dead people. They can't hear me, but congratulations, which are already dead, more than the living, which are still alive. I praise the dead. You can't hear me, that's why I'm speaking so loud. Because the dead can't hear. I congratulate them. They have been relieved from life on planet Earth. They have been relieved from oppression. And death seems, looking at it under the sun, subsolar, looking under the sun, its death seems preferable to life. when you see all the wrongs. Now, to face the realities of time, the dead don't have to face it anymore, the living do. The dead are better off. Now, that's a conclusion. Now, in the light of that conclusion, there is a better conclusion. So, looking at it as it is, under the sun, apart from God, no comforter, only oppression, and looking at it, the dead are better off. Hold it, there's another conclusion, even better than this one. Thus, in verse 3, yea, better. It's a comparative that is used as a superlative. Good, better, best. What's the best thing? Best. Yet better is he than both they which hath not yet been born, yet hath not yet been, who hath not seen the evil work that is done under the sun. It is better not to have been born. Better to have never lived at all. That is the better thing. Not to have been, not to have seen the evil, the work that is done. The word evil means bad. That which is unhealthy has no good benefit, no good purpose. So when you come to the end of verse 3, to seeing the evil that is done under the sun, wow, there's nothing better. No way to come out of this. No way to win. Better you were never born at all. Never born on planet Earth. Wow. Now, having said that, and keep in mind now, this word good and better, as you'll see it, is used repeatedly in Ecclesiastes. He uses it over and over again. He's going to say this, and this is the better. And this is the better under the sun. You'll see it in verse 6. Better is an handful with quietness than both the hands full with travail and vexation of spirit. And as you keep reading, in verse 9, the two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. And you're going to find better. Now, in the light of that, Ecclesiastes chapter 4, and he goes in the light of looking at verse 1, and he draws conclusion, and then a better conclusion, better you were never born. That would be the next thing. If you were never born, you never had a beginning, you never have an ending. You have no existence, which would be true. If you were never born, you would have no existence, and you don't want to think. I know you don't need this. I know that. You don't want to think that God has a big basket. God has a basket full of people. And he's waiting to put them in bodies that are prepared. He's waiting for them, see. And here they all are. And if he runs out of bodies, what then? What then? He runs out of bodies. Where are we going to put these people? They don't exist till there's a body. And God makes them. God, all spirits are made by whom? God. All souls are made by whom? God. Person is a body and soul and spirit. Person, body, flesh and blood can what? Has to go. So, here in the light of that, in the light of all of this, better off you never were born. That's apart from God. Now that isn't true, but looking at it, apart from God, better you never came. Watch it here. Chapter 4 and verse 4. Again, I considered all travail. I considered in the light of all travail, or toil whatever toil there is, whatsoever toil, pain, painful toil, labor. Again, I considered all travail and every right work, and the word right work has to do with skill, skillful work, all, whatever toil, pain, whatsoever is done in a skillful manner, in whatever success, all success, whatever it is, work that is done, work that is successful, all the work that is successful, when you're all done with the work, to what satisfaction is one supposed to find? What are you going to find when you've done all your toil and all your labor and all your work, and you did it skillfully? You did it above and beyond others. Wow. Verse 4. Again, I considered all travail and every right work, for this a man is envied of his neighbor. This also is vanity and vexation of spirit. So here we are, the pain, the toil, and the even coming to a successful issue. All the toil and labor that you do comes to a successful issue. And then there is the envy that is to come. The person envies, neighbor, someone envies. And so what is the great issue that we're faced with being toiling, working, being successful? Well, we're faced with people, neighbors, all kinds of people in the world in which we live. And you do your business, and you are successful, and someone comes along and takes what you have and takes it a step further and overcomes what you do. And they compete with you. They're motivated, competition, rivalry. Wow. And it goes. When does it stop? Why couldn't you just invent a new clip and relax? Well, because someone sees your new clip, especially in this global day, and they are ready to copy your new clip and to make it. Don't they do that in China and stuff? Don't they make? Isn't that part of our problems? We make things in America that said do copyright laws, right? And the copyright law, and then we can go to China and make millions of them, see, and bring them back. And we don't care about a copyright law. Who cares about a copyright law? Boy, it's hard. It's hard to get ahead. Hard to make it. All the toil and all the skillful labor and everything, we're motivated to do better than someone else, to do better than something else. And so there's the envy, there's the competition. And what other people can do and what other people can't do. And we have the sense of, again, we said rivalry is a good word, competition. And someone, somewhere, somehow knows more other than we do. And our pursuit is to measure up, to be better than some, not better than others, but at least find yourself on the scale so that you don't have to think you're on the bottom. And in the process of that, you are caught in this motivating, competitive system of being somebody, doing something good enough to be recognized, honored, etc. And we're caught, aren't we? Caught trying to be successful. Caught trying to make it. Caught trying to be able to fit in. Rivalry. What does that do? Well, it makes for very troubled waters. Because is that what it's about under in the light of God? Is God about trying to be competitive with each other? No, God is about saving each one. Isn't he? That's what he's about. But we're caught up trying to make it. Competition, motivated, moved, trying to get there. And that's why sports are very popular. Sports and all kinds of things. Because they're motivating. Champion, winning, losing. See? And we're caught up in that. Our world is, isn't it? You don't have to go back to the Roman hangings and lions and fires and torture that they did. You don't have to go back to that. It's just part of life. The Roman circus, as it was called. Wow. We have to do that. We're caught. We're caught trying to compete, trying to fit in, trying to find ourselves, and not trying to get to God. We're caught up in that. And we're hung up in that. So therefore, we have in the end of verse 4, whatever we did stirred up someone else to do something more than, other than what we did. See, you build a bigger missile, and I'll build a bigger missile. Whatever it is, and then you thought you had the best missile, and now someone else is building a better missile, so now you're forced to build what? An anti-missile missile to the better missile until you get a better missile. Right? Wow. We're caught. See? We're caught. And we can't be content. We can't get to God. Luke, in closing, Luke, if you would. Luke chapter 12. If I can, Luke chapter 12, may I pick up, please? Oh, in verse 15. And he said unto them, take heed and beware of what? Why is that? For a man's life consisteth, what's the next little negative word? Not. For a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things which he possesses, etc. It isn't there. That isn't where your success is. Success isn't you invented the cure for cancer. That's a wonderful thing. Success is when you've lined your heart up with God. That is success. And we substitute everything and anything all over the place to try to make life work, because we're caught in it. We're caught in it, you see.